Welcome back, everyone. My name is Stephen Borg, and I'm here with Anthony Borton. Still, it's after lunch. Good lunch?
It was a good lunch. It was a good lunch, good break, good. Much needed.
Much needed. Gets hot in here. Next thing we're going to be covering is a little bit more on managing Team Foundation Server. I think that's... can you grab that?
Take it away.
Thank you.
It's a warm room.
It's a warm room.
Not me.
let's talk about managing Team Foundation Server a little bit more. Quick module overview. Let's get right into another topic. Managing team project collections we've already done. We've already configured for backup and recovery. We're into operate lab management now. Then managing security and managing reporting. Of these three, the most important to understand, in my opinion, is managing security. That will bite you left and right as a TFS admin and also on the exam. Managing reporting, important. Operate lab management, also important, but one of those that you study for. So let's talk first about operate lab management. Let's get that one out of the way. While we're here, we need to know how to operate and modify lab environments, repair lab environments. The only reason I think repair is in there is because of the giant strides they made in 2012 to really help with those lab environments, using snapshots and storing System Center Virtual Machine Manager environments. Now, all of these have very clear MSDN resources, where the page title is almost equal to the topic title.
That's convenient.
It's very convenient. And they walk through all of the things you need to prepare for that exam. I'm going to take some cut and pastes that I've done from each of those and talk about them on a slide and then refer back to those for people for a little bit more introduction. Now, I do want to note this. This is one that isn't listed on the earlier slide. It is the overview of lab management, and I'd really highly encourage people to read it to kind of get that base understanding. The benefits of lab management are things like being able to use a test plan to run those automated tests. So we saw this yesterday, and I'm not going to go back into it, but I had an automated test, and from within MTM, I could right-click and run it, and lab management would take care of the execution. We may want it to use a build-deploy test workflow, where our compilation deploys the app to a series of servers and then goes out and tests those in an automated fashion. It also helps to collect diagnostic data from all the machines. This is true even in manual testing, but also for automated. And what I love, and we talked about before, is automatic test agent installation. Some additional benefits now. That's lab management. All of the things you get in lab management come free with TFS. If you want to go further, you can use System Center Virtual Machine Manager, and that gives you more capabilities. Those more capabilities are things that you can use to really be more professional, add some stuff onto what you're doing. Specifically, MSDN lists three advantages. Quickly reproduce machine configurations. So we can have a template and like spin up that template and run with it. Reproduce the exact conditions of a bug. I love this one. This is the one you brought up yesterday. You're in MTM walking through, and you run into a bug. You can reach up and grab an environmental snapshot that takes everything, brings it all together, and lets us know exactly the state of that environment. And lastly, running multiple copies of a lab environment at the same time. This is some magic and some tricks underneath here. What that allows us to do is take maybe we have a database called database and a web server called web server, and they both are on the network. They're on the network. We can stamp out other copies of them on the same network and use something called network isolation so that we can work within those. Very, very powerful tool. Network isolation allows you to have multiple configurations that are identical in terms of IP addresses within that system, and also machine names, but hosted on the same network.
So go for some other ones, some bigger clashy ones. So, for example, you could have multiple copies of the same domain controller. You know, something where if you have multiple domain controllers there, multiple DHCP servers and things, that's really going to cause problems. Having the two web servers maybe with the same name, you'll get away with it.
Yeah.
But some of those bigger clashy ones, I mean, network isolation, checkbox, problem goes away.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's extraordinary.
Exactly. One thing I'm going to note just real briefly, while you're creating those SCVMM environments, that I think is important when you're talking about network isolation, is because you mentioned domain controllers. And if you network isolate something, it means it's isolated from the rest of the environment. So if you need a domain controller, you need to put your own domain controller in that network isolated environment. The funny thing is all of those machine templates that you use cannot be joined to a domain when you make them into a template. You actually physically need to remove them from the domain, add them to a work group before you make them a template. Once they're a template, then you can bring them into the isolated domain and add the domain controller and allow them to join the domain.
So maybe that just justifies more just having that domain controller in there.
I think it does.
So a very common thing to do, and particularly with the testing that you're likely to want to do, you're going to want to be able to create test user accounts. You want to have some accounts with high-level privileges, some with low-level privileges, some with passwords that have expired. So again, it's a very common scenario, I think, Steve.
Yep, I agree. All right, let's keep moving on. Here are several slides. Basically, they're for your download and your consumption as you prepare for this exam. Changing the properties of an SCVMM environment is really relatively straightforward. It's simply opening up the Lab Center inside of MTM, or the Test Professional, going to the Environment sub-tab, right-clicking your environment, and changing the properties. You basically open it up and change the properties right there. It just simply walks you through a wizard. Repairing lab environments is on here because I think, again, I mentioned, it's cool. If your lab environment fails, it's in a not ready state. It'll give you this error message that said the environment has one or more errors. And at that point, all you have to do is, this is crazy, there's a shortcut menu, right-click it, and say repair environment. Literally, that's the thing that you're studying for right there, is the right-click repair environment. And you may want to pay attention to some of the reasons, however, that needs to be done as well. Using snapshots. Snapshots are ways that you can capture your SCVMM virtual environment in a particular state. So, for instance, you may have installed SQL and installed everything, and now you want to take a snapshot because that's the pristine environment before you deploy your code. At that point, what you can do is every time you spin up a new environment, you roll back to that snapshot and deploy your application into it. I mean, you can restore an environment right from that snapshot by simply right-clicking the snapshot and rolling right back into it. You can share a snapshot of the environment, pass it around between SCVMM places. You can store it inside of a library, and of course you can delete it as well. All of these are really just right inside the UI. I'd encourage you to read that particular link. And storing SCVMM environments. Stored environments are things that you can use. You can basically, it's just an archival process. You can archive your deployed environments. You can create some from new stored virtual machines. You can store an entire network isolated environment. That's what happens when you take that snapshot from within your bug capture, et cetera. That's it. And I want to leave it at that, actually. I'm not going to dive into excruciating detail around lab management. I would encourage you to just simply read those pieces and anything else to study for that.
Not that I can think of, but how about we mix something up a little bit? I've got a couple of questions outstanding on lab. So if this is, you're about to move off from
Absolutely.
Lab?
Absolutely, I'm about to move off lab. Let's take those questions.
Let's take them while they're in context. So the first one there is, are there scenarios where lab management can be leveraged for implementing automated deployments to a physical production environment?
So, yes, absolutely. You can use lab management to deploy to a physical environment at all. And you know what? That is almost worth popping over and doing a very quick demo of. I can't actually do the deployment, but I can show you where that would take place. If we're back inside a Visual Studio, and I'm going to swap into my builds section here, and I've got, where am I? Oh, I went to my bar place. Let me come back to my team project, my Tailspin Toys, connect to that. And I have my build definition here. And this build definition is Tailspin Toys Iteration 2. This compiles it. If I add a new build definition, I can choose one for the process. We'll get to there. So this will be build and deploy TSP, Tailspin Toys. We have a trigger. It'll be manual, our workspace, yada yada. Build defaults. We've got our build controller. Copy it to whack whack foo, whack whack bar. Our process, and here's the case. Rather than using our default template here, we want to change this to using what's called the lab default template .11.xaml. And this particular thing gives you a wizard for deploying your application. So the first thing you do is you specify what environment are we going to deploy to. And we talked about environments yesterday. This can be a standard environment, or an SCVMM environment. And then we can choose to revert to a particular snapshot of that environment as well. And we can also take a look at the...
Just click on welcome at the top, then go to build.
This tip is flipping awesome. I'm at welcome, I go to next. I can't go any further unless I go to welcome and then back to build. Anthony, that was amazing. Once again, for all who might have missed it, I'm at welcome. I click next. This does not work. I want to go see. Oh, look at that. Oh, I can't even click it. Go back to welcome, back to build. How on earth did you figure that out?
Exploratory testing?
Evidently. That's like who was the first person in Australia to figure out that licking those toads? It just seems like a very strange
thing. I was probably
one
of the last people to figure it out.
All right. So we're going to use a particular build here. And we can say what we'd like to do is we're going to use Tailspin Toys Iteration 2, and we're going to queue a new build. What that means is it's going to create a new, when this triggers, it's going to create a build, and then it's going to go through this process of deployment. And we want to deploy the build. We're going to specify the roles of the machines in that environment or the particular names, and we can deploy to those environments. And then we can at least, of course, come back and then test those as well and run particular tests. So that's what we can do with this lab management infrastructure. And again, it can be standard or SCVMM environments. I like standard environments. I don't think there's anything wrong with sticking with standard environments if you can't get people to invest in a large Hyper-V infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, the word large there, let me call that one back out for a moment. I mean, I've had this infrastructure set up for very small teams where, you know, subject to the licensing, popping it on a machine literally under the desk. Now, I know that's to be frowned upon, let's be clear, but there's nothing actually stopping you do that. So if I want to go ahead and just get a reasonable box, but almost pop it under the desk as opposed to, you know, getting some very, very high-end box in the server room, I can still run Hyper-V down there. And if my environment's just a single machine, I don't need a lot of resource to bring it up, take advantage of the lab workflow, take advantage of the snapshots. So for many of my customers, it's a case of sometimes saying, well, you know what, this isn't just for the big guys in town.
Yeah.
Small teams can really take advantage of this.
I do agree. Yeah. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. You do have the SCVMM cost
yes.
to actually buy the software, but other than that, you can get into some... Hardware's cheap. Mm-hmm. You can buy a relatively decent machine for under $10,000 that's got a good bunch of disks and rated and can be pretty quick.
Easily.
Yep. We do that inside of Northwest Cadence, and we've run into some performance issues. What we'd really like to do is drop in some SSD hard drives. Ooh, yeah. Don't necessarily need them rated, but I think that might help the performance.
For sure.
All right, so that's that lab management default template that we can get through that build, deploy, test workflow. Any other questions?
No, I think the other one has already been answered. We're good to go.
All right. Let's talk then about the deep, meaty question here, which is how do you manage security? Security is one of those things that can just, it can drive you absolutely crazy when you're trying to administer a TFS server. So I want to really stress, start with simple, open security if you can do it. I've actually dealt with a company that locked down source control so much that they would make a phone call to the build master. The build master would unlock that branch and they could check into the branch. If that would have been like some massive code promotion place, you know, where you're going in archival or something, I could understand it. That was to check in at the end of the day. Needless to say, people didn't check in often. Don't do that. Don't do anything like that. Keep your security simple. Now, having said that, for the exam, you need to know how security works, however. So there's a couple key areas about security. So if we pop down to the slides, we can see that we need to be able to configure limited users. And if you notice to the bottom, configure security for users who do not have a client access license. So happens, that's kind of the same thing. So we'll be able to double up on that. Managing roles in TFS using Active Directory groups, or just any Windows group in general. Managing permissions in SharePoint, SSRS, builds, source control, and work items. I don't know why work item management is capitalized and source control isn't, but we'll run with that. And creating and managing teams. Teams are very, very important because they're brand new in TFS 2012. So we'll talk about those things. Here are some MSDN resources that I'd like to point you to. And feel free to download and link to those. So the first thing is limited users. This was formerly called the work item only view, WEOV. And it limits users to go in and create work items or view the work items that they have created and edit them. Here's the kicker. It requires no client access license. Anybody can just pop on in there, add a bug, and get out of the way. Now, when I say anybody, I don't mean any anonymous user. Instead, we need to get to this location here on the control panel and add Windows users, Active Directory groups, or TFS groups to something called the limited access level. And I'm going to show this in a demo. But once somebody's added to that, then they can just go to the website, and if they're part of that group, they'll see a restricted view. All right. It's time for the demo. We're going to demo all of those things. So let's pop into the demo. And here we are in managing security, and it's up on my screen. I'm going to pop back over to Fabricam Fiber Collection. And I want to start off right here and show you how we get to do some of the security. The security is almost all under this little administrator settings. There's a little gear button here. If you have the right permission, you can see it and click it. And if I go over here to the control panel, you'll see I have Fabricam Fiber here, and I have four teams. I have the Fabricam Fiber team. This is the one that's the default one. Anytime you create a team project, it creates a team for that team project by default. It also, we have a web team, product development, and production support. But what I want to show first is this work item only view. And if to do that, you need to go all the way back to the control panel and click it. From here, we now can see what we have, all of our team project collections and all of the various components underneath. But more importantly, we can look at our access levels. And we have limited, standard, and full or default. And let's talk about the difference between standard and full first. Standard gives you your own view of the work items, your standard features, and the Agile task board. If I want to do the backlog and sprint planning tools and request and manage feedback, I require a full license. Now, the full license comes only with Visual Studio Premium or higher, or owning Test Professional. That's how you get those. Limited means I don't have a client access license at all, and I don't want to pay for one. So in that case, we can go and add Windows users or groups to this one. So we could add Let's add Cameron. Let's add local service. I'm afraid to add somebody here because it does impact their ability to do things. So we're going to add Cameron Skinner and save those changes here. Now, when Cameron Skinner comes in, he's going to only see that restricted web access view. Now, I'm also going to remove him.
Chicken.
I know. You can also add TFS groups or, like I mentioned, Windows groups as well. So you can, we have administrators, right? That's a group. And you can simply add groups to here. I am so not pushing save at that particular moment in time.
I'm going to reach over.
One of our coworkers, Etienne Tremblay, on a TFS server serving hundreds upon hundreds. Maybe I shouldn't use his name. anyway, he went and
just like E.T.
E.T., that's it. Wonderful character. He went in and he unchecked the permission to administer TFS, basically, and push save, nope, not even thinking about it, made one change to something and it automatically zeroed out his permissions. This was back in 2008. Ooh. Doesn't happen anymore. But all of a sudden, poof! As the TFS admin, he had no control, couldn't even log in, and it locked everyone in the entire company out of their TFS server, with the exception of people who were admins on the application tier itself, local admins on the application tier. So that's why I'm a little nervous to do some of those. But that's how you add groups right to there. Now let's go back. I might just point out extensions. This is where you can upload some extensions for the web access. Not many people have built them yet. There's some people like Diego Pascal who's doing a lot of work around this, and you can check out his blog. It's very interesting.
So if you just go back to the web access again. So pretty much before, we only had to worry about two groups. Whether they had a CAL, and if they did, they could get access to the full web experience, or they didn't, so they had a limited experience. So now we've got three things to manage.
That's a good point.
And it's got to do with the license that those end users have. So it's a little bit more work there. What's the set the default access level about?
Yes, you can set the default access level to say, if people come in, they're going to come in at what level. If they're just part of a group and not been directly identified in one of these, we're going to get full in this particular case.
Okay, so we'd basically set the default to what the majority of our users had, and then just choose the other two as an exclusive.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
I probably set this default to full. That might be you might run into a true up at some point, but we'll leave it at that. And this is a demo machine, so I'm fine doing that. All right, we can go ahead and close this, and just drop back out of that. And in here, let's go in and let's take a look at the various teams we have. We have Fabricam Fiber, Product Development, and Production Support. I want to talk a little bit about team-based security because I think that's the next most important thing. So let's go in and let's create a brand new team for these guys. Once again, we're going to go over here and create a new team. What do you want to call the team? We'll do Anthony's, what's something starts with A? Anthony's Airheads, Anthony's.
Oh, no.
Nice. No, I don't want, I'm just trying to think of something with an A. Ah!
That'll do. Nice.
We'll go ahead and create the team. We're going to make them contributors. And we're going to create an area path with the name of that team. Whoops, of course, I can't have that in there. Create the team. I had an invalid one. Yeah, I guess so.
That's good.
So here I am. We have one member, and we have a brand new team. Now, if I want to go and add permissions to this team, I need to actually drill into you as a team and then start to add some permissions. Now, you belong to this area. Here's your area. By default, teams have a default area. Now, what are teams? Are they TFS security groups? What are they?
Well, I don't know if I'm going to say this, but it's basically a filter is what I normally describe.
It's a great idea to describe it as a filter. So you can kind of filter out and say you're part of this group. Let's go back to those areas for yours, and if I right-click the areas, I can set up security in that area. And here's the interesting thing. I want to give your group, Anthony's Aussies, a more oomph. I want to give you lots of more than contributor rights here. How come you're not here in any of the TFS groups?
Because it's not a security group as such.
You would think. It actually hides as a security group. I'm going to add that TFS group, and in the TFS group,
look,
here you appear. What drives me crazy is that all of the default ones show up here, but Teams do not. And this is important to understand, because if I want to go and grant you separate permissions, I actually need to go and add you as that TFS group, and from that point, I can give you permissions, like to create child nodes and to edit this node. So, and save those changes. Now, the same thing is, I have a couple other groups here, right? On Fabricam Fiber, I've got groups, I've got product development and production support. Well, one of those is maintenance, and one of those is creating new code. I don't want those two ever to talk to each other. What if they don't trust each other? What if they don't like each other? What if they fight and go and screw up each other's source code? You probably have some other dysfunctions you want to handle first, but let's deal with that in particular. Let's go into the product development sub-team, and let's make sure that they cannot do any work inside of production support. So we're at the product development team, we go to production support, right-click, look at security, add a TFS group, and that TFS group is going to be production support. And since we're going to need it later, let's go ahead and add one more. Let's add not just production support, but product development. And we're going to take the product development people, and this is permissions for the production support area, and this is work item control. And on the edit this node, we're going to put deny. We might deny deleting this node, deny creating it, but edit work items, we might take that away. We'll deny them the permission to edit work items inside of that other node. So we save those changes, and at that point, people in product development have very restricted permissions in production support. We can do the same thing here with security, and we can take we're in product development, so we're going to grab the production support people. And those people will have deny permissions. And allow for view on that particular one in that area. So that means they can only create work items there. They can only create work items in their own node, so people can't be assigning work back and forth. So that's how teams work. By the way, setting those things up, if you do the exact same thing with TFS groups, it's identical with TFS groups. So teams and TFS groups, I love the way you think of them as a filter, because in most cases, that's all they really are. But from a security perspective, they're also a TFS group that kind of hides under the covers a little bit. All right, let's take a look at the security tab, because why is this here? We just set up security. We set up security under areas, which is work item security. Now we're looking at overall security at a much higher level. Should they be able to delete test runs, delete team projects, create test runs, view project level information, etc. This is a little bit higher level security. Notice things like managed test environments and managed test configurations, things that we dealt with yesterday, are things that people would have to come here to set. Those permissions are set here. While I'm on the topic of teams, I'm going to talk about alerts, unless I'm going to be stealing something from you. Okay, I can talk about alerts. These are team alerts, so I can come into here and say, for product development alerts, I want a new work item alert. And this can be whenever a change, whenever a work item is assigned to me, I could set that up as a team project alert. What that means is this is an alert for all of product development. So now if anybody in product development is assigned a work item, they will get an email. This is setting things up via team as well as just my alerts. This is new as well. This ability to set up these team alerts without relying on a power tool. Any questions on that?
Nope.
Anthony?
Nope, that's pretty good. I mean, it's so much nicer than the out-of-the-box experience for alerts has always been. And even having to go back and use the power tools to get a better experience was certainly frustrating in the past. So to be able to go in there, to be able to configure those alerts at different levels, and to do it through a web UI, I think that's been a huge improvement.
It is. Next thing that I do want to talk about a little bit is administrator actions are built right in here for alerts. So we don't have to use, I just forgot the name of the command line. What's the command line tool for alerts? It is, my goodness, it's one you don't.
Biz subscribe.
BIS subscribe. That's great. Nicely done. Nicely done. So I can find alerts for a particular user here. Like I can go in and say, you know what, show me all of Brian Keller's alerts down in here and administrator actions. I've found those Brian Keller alerts. They're here. And then I can do things like working with those alerts. I can open them up and potentially delete those alerts. So as an administrator, I can now search for other people's alerts and delete them. That's something that you never used to be able to do. When you were leaving the company and leaving all that checked out code, normally what you'd do if you were upset would go and you'd set up a whole bunch of alerts and then bail, right? So everybody gets emails all the time. And it used to be really difficult to fix that. I know. It's not me. This is you that does that when you're leaving the company. All right. Back over here, that's one of the core pieces. Now, we've talked about basic security. We've talked about security at the work item level. We haven't talked it at the iteration level. So we can drop into our iteration. And right here, we can look at security here as well. So security and iterations, whether people can create child nodes, delete the nodes, or edit this nodes, etc. That's done here. And we haven't talked about source control security. Source control security is going to be managed through, if we go to the Team Explorer here and drop into the Source Control Explorer, we can make the changes here. So let's say that this release, this production 1.0 branch, we really only want to have administrators on that group. So we might go in and here we can look at our advanced security settings, and in here for our project administrators we can give them check-in permissions and we can let them check in other users as well, and we can give them checkout permissions, and then we can go into like contributors and we can set those to deny. So no one else can basically check in except if you're a project administrator. Might have to do the same for builders and some of the others as well.
And that's just not just about keeping people out. It's just to help save genuine mistakes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. There's a kind of an interesting thing. If the project administrators, let's use builders instead, have check in other users' changes as allowed, and they can check in, but the contributors have the check-in rights denied, but checkout rights allowed. That means they can check out from the branch, edit the branch all they want, do merges against the branch, but when they go to check in, it fails. So they shelf set it, email the shelf set to the builder. The builder can go get it and then check it in on their behalf. That's kind of an advanced usage of that.
So you alluded to some inheritance of rights there. So if a team member can be a member of multiple teams or groups, what's the relationship between the security there?
That's a great point. So if it's the allow security, it's the union of all of your permissions. So if you have permission to go into something, you have permission to edit in Team Project A and edit in Team Project B, you can edit in both of those. If you are denied, deny overwrites everything else. So let's say I'm a member of two groups, Team A and Team B, and Team A is denied permission to check into Team B's branch. If I'm also a member of Team B, I will be denied because of my membership in Team A. So that's the intersection of those rights. Kind of like SQL Server does its rights as well. Very similar in that allow, deny.
And in TFS as well.
And in TFS. All right, so we've done it at the source code level. A couple other areas we need to talk security are at SQL Server reporting services and
SharePoint.
SharePoint. So let's drop up to SharePoint. I think I have one already opened. Here I am. And in here, I've opened up on site actions here. I can go in and we have some site permissions where we grant people permission to the sites. So in order to grant people permission to the sites, you grant them at this level. So you can grant permissions to particular individuals at this level. And you can use users or groups. So SharePoint is just done completely independently of TFS. I like to use Active Directory groups here, especially in SharePoint, TFS, and SSRS. So as soon as I'm in the right group, I have permission to all three of them without having to manage those manually and independently. Now let's look at reports. Let's go to, that was, I want to get to view reports. Here we have some reports for Tailspin Toys. And on this particular one, we have folder settings. And one of those folder settings is security. And now we edit the security independently at the reporting services. Folks, this is where it's a pain. I go to reporting services, and I don't really care who sees the reports. I might be very tempted to just open them wide open and put all, you know, everyone inside of the top level of this of my reporting services and let it just cascade all the way down so everybody has read permission. Just make it easy. Okay, I might come back to this Tailspin Toys collection just for giggles to do some uploads here. All right, back to that security piece. We've talked security. SSRS, we've talked all of them. There was one you mentioned, however, which was build security. And you mentioned this earlier. And builds also have a little bit of security as well. So for a particular build, I can set up some security on that and who has permissions to delete, administer build permissions, delete builds here, etc. So permissions can also be set all the way down at this build permissions level. Mm-hmm. Okay. Which brings us, we talked about teams, we talked about work item security, we've talked about limited and work item web only views. I think that wraps it. Anything else in security that we needed to talk about?
No, that's pretty good. That's good coverage.
Okay, good.
Do you want some questions?
I'll take questions.
Excellent. So let's go back to...
Good timing.
Let's go back to some alerts.
Okay,
so a couple of questions on the alerts there. Okay, there's a comment here. So the only person who is assigned the work item gets the alert, not the entire team?
The way that I have set it up, yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. Is it possible to set a team alert but excluding some people?
Well, you could create a different TFS security group that you restricted some and you put in different people there. But no, otherwise not. Not to my knowledge. Wait 1 minute. What if we do something like this? We go up to alerts. Let's go in and create a new work. Let's call it a work item alert. A new alert. And we'll just start with this. Get rid of this clause, so it's and we can get rid of this me. So it's team project and assigned to is equal to, where's my team? My assigned to is why am I not seeing my teams in here? This is going to send to all the default. I totally don't see my teams. I guess that's going to have to be just a regular query. Mm. I'm still limited to the contains, does not contain, changes from, changes to. I was hoping to say it's a member of a team and then group two clauses and say and, or you know, and it's not this person. This particular one, change the work item I created, will send out to the default addresses for individuals in HTML, and the subscriber is that web team itself. I could change that to just be myself if need be. I don't think that helped. So the answer to that is no. I was hoping that there would be kind of some kind of sly way I could get around some of those problems, but evidently not.
And it might not have been particularly good practice either.
Yeah, potentially not. Yeah. But still.
Okay. What do we got there? So just a general question there. So you showed the services tab in Web Access. There's a question there, where can I download an extension to Web Access?
Where can you download an extension to Web Access? You can't yet, that I know of. I know of absolutely no extensions that have been built yet. I would go to Bing and search for Tiago Pascal and just see if he's got one that, you can drop in here. Whoops, I'm on the services. What I meant to do was control panel, extensions, and install an extension. Here's where you're gonna go find particularly, well, I don't, not these. You're gonna find your JPEGs. I mean your JavaScript files. JPEGs. Yeah.
That extension's been in browsers for a long time, actually.
Yes, it has. All right. Any more questions on that?
Doesn't look like it for now.
All right. So we're done with managing security. We're going to drop into the last one, which also happens to be a very short one, which is the reporting and managing the reporting inside of Team Foundation Server. So manage reporting. Here's the things. Managing basic reporting using Microsoft Office Excel services. It's just understanding how Excel services works. I'm going to have a link, and I'm going to encourage you to go check out that link. Also, customizing the SharePoint team project portal. I didn't run across a lot here, but I'm going to go ahead and show it here. Uploading a new SSRS Team Foundation Server report. I'll go ahead and do that. And configure TFS to enable a report to appear in a project portal. And rebuilding the Team Foundation Server data warehouse. This, on the other hand, is a big deal. This is something people need to know all the time, and things kind of get blocked, and you need to trigger that rebuild. So here's the MSDN resources. Again, I'm going to very much encourage you read a couple of these. This is managing basic reporting and configuring TFS to enable a report to appear. Those are good ones to just simply read. You get the basic workflow necessary. Now, we've got several approaches to rebuilding the warehouse in the cube. There's the manual approach, and you go to this warehouse control service, which we've actually seen before, but we trigger a different one called process warehouse, and we click invoke. And once that's done, we click Process Analysis Database and either do an incremental or a full build and click Invoke. You can also use the UI inside the TFS Administration Console. We can basically go under the Reporting tab and click the Start Rebuild button. It will take both of them offline and rebuild both of them. There's one other way that is important. It's the TFS config.exe rebuild warehouse command line. And you need to run this with an elevated command prompt. But the interesting thing here is that you can pass in all to process the warehouse in the cube, or you can only pass in analysis services to process just the cube. You have to process in one or the other, pass in one or the other. But there is no option at all to process the warehouse without the cube. So this one limits your flexibility pretty greatly, because you can't do just the warehouse, but not the cube itself. Let's jump into a very quick demo here, where we can take a look at some of these things. And feel free to dig up some more questions, because we're getting very much to the end of this presentation. All right, back to this warehouse control web service. If we go over here, we have Process Analysis Database and Process Warehouse. We click the Process Warehouse. You can process it for a particular collection name or job name. We're going to use neither, and we'll invoke it. And all this returns is true. True meaning it's been queued for rebuilding. At that point, you can go ahead and close it, go back to your warehouse one, and rather than process the warehouse, you now get processing status. It's the one we've seen before. Let's just use online ones, true, invoke. And now we can see the number of cubes. You can see up here that the warehouse processing online status has started, etc. And then we can go back once again, and we can trigger the process analysis database. And we'll say incremental, just for speed, and invoke it. It tells me it's going. Again, I can go back and look at the process. It knows to wait till the other one finishes before this one triggers. All right, that's how I do it here. Let's go back into the TFS administration console, and there's the reporting tab under application tier, and there's a button here that says start rebuild. And it says, hey, this is going to take everything offline and rebuild it. Okay, go ahead and do that. And it's going to tell me, we're sorry, it's being rebuilt right now. Mm-hmm. There's some jobs that are running, I have to wait, so I can't actually trigger it now. But that's a very easy way to do it. And then, of course, there's the TFS config. Repair. Rebuild warehouse. TFS config rebuild warehouse. And we can see here that this particular one rebuilds the analysis services database and the relational database, just like we mentioned. Those are the three main sources of that. That's how you manually rebuild the cube, how you rebuild it with the command line, and how you rebuild it with the TFS administration console. Next thing that you need to know is how to upload an SSRS file. So let's go back to, here's our Fabricam Fiber one, and I think I opened up another one that I had. Here's our Tailspin Toys. Notice there are no reports here. Yikes. If you don't have reports and you want to upload all of them, there is a command line you can use from the, it's called TFPT, it's the Power Tools, and it's called add project reports. And that will add all the project reports here. That's not part of the prep guide. In here case, we just want to upload it, so I'm going to browse and I'm going to go to my desktop and I'm going to find my Super Sprint Burndown RDL file, click open, call it Super Sprint Burndown. Overwrite the item if it exists or not, it doesn't matter because there's nothing there. And now, there it is, my Super Sprint Burndown indicates the team's awesome progress that's being made. That's all there is to uploading files. Very, very simple. Some configuration you need to do to make them run, and you do that within the Manage tab. And we can set like parameters and some data sources. It doesn't have a data source now, so we need to go find the TFS reports DS. And the OLAP reports DS. So that the thing will work once you upload it. All right, that wraps reporting. Well, I probably ought to do one more thing. Let's go back over. Let's go back to the project portal again and just show you how you can... Yep, look at that. Fabricam Fiber. I don't want this one. Give me Tailspin Toys. That's the wrong one. Okay, well, we're just going to do this. We're going to do this the hard way. Tailspin Toys Collection. Whack. Tailspin Toys. And it's not even there. Great. So back to our project portal. We got some details here that I seem to have messed up a couple things. Doesn't matter. I can go to Site Actions here. Did I just take away my permissions? When I was doing that permission exercise on Fabricam Fiber, I think I just yanked my permissions. Unbelievable.
So you and ET, I can use you both for examples
and
now.
Me and ET, I can. Ay, ay, ay. All right, but you can go in here and edit the page. Evidently, I have enough permission to edit the page, and I can add web parts here. And there's some Visual Studio Team Foundation Server web parts that you can put in here. For instance, like part links, new work item shortcuts, go to work item. There's a web access shortcut, etc. So I can add some of those in here. And then another thing I can do, if I stop editing, is on my, if I go to my release dashboard, yep, I stripped my permissions. Right here, there's normally a button that says clone this.
They're looking at that going, there's no way you'd want to clone that mess.
No, there isn't. Here it is, copy dashboard, and you go in, this is this release one, we'll call it release 2 at ASPX. And have a horrible spelling there, and copy that dashboard. That's how you can copy a dashboard if you need to. Yep, see, there it is, all spelled funky. All right, any questions? No questions. I'm going to jump straight back into. I mean, there may be some that don't tie in that we might come back a little bit later, but I'm going to come back to the presentation, and we're going to take a quick look at some of the exam best bets.
Excellent.
The exam best bets that I have for this particular section are focus on what's possible rather than the deep technical details. That might look similar. Mm-hmm. In this case, learn the basics of lab management as opposed to the steps necessary. Really clearly understand how security around teams work, both with version control and work items, and know how to rebuild the data warehouse in multiple ways. And that wraps this section.
All right. William Cecil wants to know, can we get a free version of TFS?
Can we get a free version of TFS? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you go to TF Service or tfs.visualstudio.com, you're able to get a free copy there for up to 5 people to use. I really like that as an option. Otherwise, I believe it requires an MSDN subscription.
Yes. But
it doesn't cost anything in addition to that, but you do need an MSDN subscription.
So is it like a TFS Express or a TFS
There was TFS Basic, but I thought you still need to have an MSDN license to download it. Mm-hmm. Now, you can get those fairly inexpensively if you're part of some of their
partner programs
or what are those programs with the Kickstarters,
not
the
BizSpark.
Mm-hmm. BizSpark or EduSpark or WebSpark or any of the Spark ones.
Okay. StarSpark.
That could be.
Okay.
It's for Hollywood. Hollywood, well, folks.
I think you've worked out there. I think you deserve a break, Steve.
All right. Let's go ahead and take a break. We'll come back in 10 minutes.